doctrines of hatred get spread in some surprising ways, even in literature. Well, that's probably not the right term for this book.
Saddam Hussein had written a romance novel, Zabiba and the King. What kind of romance novel does a kind of murderous dictator write?
What was it like?
It's fairly terrible. It's set in like the early Islamic period. And there's a pagan king who falls in love with a young Muslim woman. And they have very, very long political discourses. She instructs him on the art of leadership. So there's that going on, but simultaneously there's a sort of 1001 Nights type narrative structure. There's a grandmother who's talking to these children, telling them, oh, I'll tell you the story of this king. But then there's wildly inappropriate content. Scenes of rape, weird description of bestiality in northern Iraq. Even in translation, you can tell this is no masterpiece.
Fascist dictators don't only murder millions of people, they also write books. Daniel Calder spent 8 years reading the collected writings of some of the world's most notable tyrants, so you and I don't have to. So tell us about your dictator's library. What's on the shelves?
Lenin, Stalin, Mussolini, Hitler, and then Chairman Mao, Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, Ayatollah Khomeini, North Korean dictators, Fidel Castro, and I have a look at Putin's judo manual.
Who would have guessed that all these dictators would have written books? Would you call it a literary tradition? Because we could call it dick lit.
Yeah, that's what I called it, dick lit, after chick lit, which was a trend right at the time. I thought, man, there's actually like a dictatorial canon, if you will. It's not just random incidents of like a guy writes a book. They have huge bibliographies. They're aware of each other as writers.
I was going to ask, do they read each other?
Certainly in the early days, they were acutely aware of each other. I mean, I know Mussolini read Mein Kampf and he thought it was atrocious. Hitler was a big fan of Mussolini. Stalin's oeuvre, for want of a better word, a lot of it is quotations from Lenin. Or even a guy like Gaddafi, he called his book The Green Book. This was just 2 or 3 years after Chairman Mao had released The Red Book. Hmm. They're kind of jockeying for position as leaders of the world revolution.
I just can't imagine what it would be like to read all of this. As far as I can tell, you didn't just read their big books, you read everything they wrote.
I didn't read everything they wrote. I mean, if you were to read everything Lenin wrote, it's thousands and thousands and thousands of pages. Mm-hmm. And when they were revolutionaries, yes, they wrote their own stuff. But once they became dictators, they started to cheat.
Did they just have their peons write their works for them?
Some of them did and some of them didn't. So in North Korea, yeah, it was like a factory production line. But some of them, you'd be very surprised. Stalin was very hands-on. He was astoundingly hands-on. I would say he was the chief editor of the Soviet Union. And so so there was a very famous book, The Short Course, it was called. It was a history of the Communist Party. And Stalin, this was sort of created because they'd murdered so many people and erased so many people from history. It was a real problem that they had all these books floating around with non-persons or people who had suddenly you couldn't mention. So they decided to standardize history. So Stalin commissioned this book, The Short Course. In the archives, you can see, you know, his editorial pencil on just page after page after page. And he wasn't just making comments about, oh, you know, give us a bit more about Lenin here. It was a kind of line editing and copy editing and a choice of word. And so he was like a line editor from hell. And that's astounding when you think of, I mean, he was a murderous tyrant running a country. I guess it shows how significant he thought the books were.
I can imagine this would be a really stimulating, engaging intellectual project to take on. Did it have an emotional effect on you? I mean, what did it feel like to read all this stuff?
That's a good question. It was stupefyingly boring. For example, Mein Kampf was extremely difficult to read. But I read it in chunks, in pieces. It's clearly the work of a murderous fanatic. If you haven't read Mein Kampf, it's everything you imagine it could be. Raw hatred and violence. But for me, this was something that I wouldn't say I welcomed it. But like I say, so I lived in Russia for like 9 or 10 years. And I had a lot of friends there. And I arrived after the Soviet Union collapsed, but they often spoke about the mind-numbing boredom of the Soviet Union. Hmm. And so for me, as I read these books, I was interested in them as a kind of a portal into this boredom. After doing it for a couple of years, I developed a sort of, I became inured. Just kind of, I could keep going.
And some of these books are still in circulation and still read today. I think Mein Kampf, which was not even allowed to be published in Germany from the war years until about 2016, but it's really popular in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mein Kampf taps into an ancient hatred. If you look at like some of the communist things, they're sort of, they're millenarian, but it's tied to this theory that's very difficult to read. Whereas Mein Kampf, the theory's gibberish, but it just taps much more into these evil emotions that I think it kind of encourages in people.
One lesson I took away from reading about some of this stuff is all these guys, all the dictators, they all wanted to be writers, and often they started writing when they were still just young revolutionaries. But what they wrote was terrible. You know, as you said, it was boring, it was hard to read, it wandered all over the place. And yet, those books took over really quickly. They would go from writing some boring political tract to suddenly having vast political power over the course of a decade. Could that happen again today, or was that really just a feature of the time?
I don't think anybody expected it to happen then. And that's what also kept occurring to me, was like, wow, you know, there was the Bolsheviks, there was barely any of them. Like, in their first Congress was like 9 or 10 or 11. 20 years later, they're in charge of the largest country on the planet. It's not just enough to write a book. When the Bolsheviks appeared, there was World War I, Tsardom was rotten, there was like economic crisis. So you need to have a cluster of these things in place. And then you need to have like a guy who knows how to seize the moment. Lenin, he absolutely understood how to seize the moment. But there were other authors in Hungary and Germany who attempted the same thing and didn't succeed. So you might see, well, this is a marginal and completely ridiculous idea, and it's believed by just a handful of people. But that's no sign they're not going to be successful given the right conditions. So I think it's going to happen again. I don't anticipate it, but at the same time, things can happen very quickly. Disgruntled intellectuals with bizarre ideas can be much more dangerous than they appear, but we don't know which ones.
Daniel Calder. His guide to the classics of authoritarian literature is just out. It's called The Infernal Library.